It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Late last year, President Joe Biden signed the Stop Campus Hazing Act. The new law aims to reduce hazing on college campuses through stricter reporting rules, penalties, and more accessible university reports on hazing issues that parents and students can access.
More than half of all college students in sororities and fraternities experience some form of hazing, and over 70% of student athletes report being hazed during their sports career. Those statistics are from the Hazing Prevention Network.
What does the new law mean for college campuses here in Wisconsin? Todd Shelton is executive director of the Hazing Prevention Network, and Sarah Johannes is coordinator for sorority and fraternity life at Marquette University. Sarah, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Todd, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, and thanks for the opportunity to be here.
Let's start with this federal law now in effect this year. Todd, what are some of the main points of this new federal hazing law?
Absolutely. Thanks for asking. We're very excited to have this finally passed after several years of advocating for it. The major components are, one, it includes hazing in universities' Clery Act reporting, which is their crime reporting. So now hazing is considered a crime when they're reporting. It establishes a definition for hazing for that purpose. Important to us, I think, is that it requires universities to include their hazing policy on their website and list any hazing prevention programming that the university does so that students and parents have that in front of them to know what campuses are doing to prevent hazing. Lastly, it includes a campus transparency report requirement, which has universities include their student organizational conduct related to hazing and other similar crimes on their website so that students and parents can look if they're looking at joining a team or an organization and know what the organizational conduct is for that organization or team and make a more educated decision before joining.
Sarah, some of these are new reporting requirements. How much does this federal law change, if at all, how you handle hazing policy at Marquette?
I don't think it changes too much. I think, as Todd said, there's two new things that we will have to do on our end, which is updating our hazing policy and including hazing incidents within our reporting. And I think the most important thing is to note is that, and what I've been learning from this course that I'm taking through the Hazing Prevention Network is reporting hazing is not to get anyone in trouble, but it's to keep people safe.
Can you talk about what hazing is, Sarah, at Marquette? How is hazing defined as you talk to sororities and fraternities, for example, on campus?
Sure. So we have our overall Marquette definition of hazing. Would you like me to read the...
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to hear it. As okay. A great case study,
yes.
Here in Wisconsin.
So our hazing policy that is for the Marquette University says it is a violation of the student conduct code for a student or student organization to participate in hazing or harassment, which includes actions or situations that do or could result in mental, emotional, or physical discomfort, embarrassment, ridicule, or endangerment, whether intentionally for fun or by consent. So that is the overall Marquette's mission. And then in my work as sorority and fraternity life coordinator, I have another policy with hazing within our risk management policy that includes the Wisconsin State Legislature law that defines hazing. And then there's just a little blurb of that we have a zero tolerance and to contact myself or someone in the student conduct office. And then I link the Hazing Prevention Network in as a resource. So I think for this new law and us relooking at our policy, we'll have to maybe blend, but also expand more on what that means and how we report.
And Todd, can you talk about the importance of dealing with hazing, the harm it can cause?
Sure. I feel like I should note that hazing occurs in all types of organizations and teams, not just fraternity and sorority life. And hazing really, it's about that differing power dynamic between people who are in the group and those who want to be a part of the group. And it gets dangerous when those in the group start requiring activities or things of those wanting to be a part of the group, and can easily cause at minimum mental or mild physical harm, but in worst cases it can be serious physical harm or death, which is why we stress that it's important to take hazing seriously.
And Sarah, we've mentioned this isn't just about fraternities and sororities. As you work, though, with fraternities and sororities on your campus, do you get a sense that, hey, they're taking this message about hazing to heart, taking it seriously?
Yeah, I think so. They have to do so. Our fraternities and sororities are nationally affiliated with a national organization. So they also have to do hazing prevention within their own sorority or fraternity. So on top of what we do at Marquette for hazing prevention education, there's also another level that they're doing at their national or international organization.
Todd, you mentioned the years of advocacy that led up to this federal law. And tragically, I understand a lot of the advocacy comes from parents who have actually lost children to hazing incidents on campuses around the country. Can you talk about that leadership from parents who want to make sure, hey, this same tragedy doesn't happen to their own kids?
I can. And it just amazes me. Our coalition of advocates has included the parents, particularly from several families, and they tell their story over and over again about what happened to their son or daughter because of hazing. And in most of these cases, it's families who have lost their child. Their child has died because of hazing activities, and their advocacy is truly what I think pushed this legislation through, because over and over again, they would go to D.C. and speak to their congresspeople and their senators and stressing the importance of the legislation. And really the fact that they had done their research when their child was joining organizations, but there was nothing specific to find. It was just the positive marketing type message related to organizations. And so that's why they felt it critical to have this transparency to show the conduct. And it's conduct records that universities typically already have. It's just a matter of making them public so that the parents can make a better decision. But I don't know how anyone could hear their story and what is the impact that has happened to their families without wanting to help take action.
And Sarah, as you mentioned, there will be new reporting here. This is in the works. Can you talk about the process that you're going through at Marquette to set up this policy, to set up that reporting that Todd was talking about, so that parents and students can look and say, look at how these organizations have handled hazing in the past?
Yeah, so right now we're still in the information gathering phase of how we want our policy to look, and then also how the reporting will look as well. So it's a collaborative effort with our general counsel, our student conduct office, which is housed within our Office of Student Development, our student engagement services, including student organizations, and then with my office as well as sorority and fraternity life.
And Todd, I imagine people in Sarah's position and others around the country are coming to your organization looking for input on, you know, how to set up policies under this new federal law to meet, maybe even exceed the guidelines that are coming from the federal government. What kind of advice do you have for people setting these policies now?
They truly are. As soon as the legislation passed and was signed into law in December, we started receiving outreach from campus professionals all over the country. And our organization, Hazing Prevention Network, and other nonprofits are out there providing education. We've done several webinars in the last 2.5-3 months talking about policy development prevention education, and there are other organizations too helping. But I would advise campuses that have not started looking at it to take a serious look at their policy, and remember that their hazing prevention policy needs to represent a campus-wide effort. It's not for individual communities within their campus. It's campus-wide, and have solid education for students and for the professionals there on campus, because the professionals need to understand hazing, the motivators that contribute to it, and the disruptors for hazing, so that they can so that it can be addressed and hopefully prevented. And then it's also important when developing your policy to think about how you're going to investigate hazing and hold students accountable who are in violation of your policy.
We are talking about hazing, mostly on college campuses right now, and the new federal Stop Campus Hazing Act. We've got Todd Shelton with us with the Hazing Prevention Network, and Sarah Johannes, Marquette University's Coordinator of Sorority and Fraternity Life. Todd, what you just said makes me think, you know, many organizations, it could be a marching band or a sports team or at the high school or college level, whatever, might have a culture, a tradition that makes hazing come up again and again. Apart from rules and enforcement, how do you get those people involved to change that culture to say, hey, we don't have to pass this hazing custom on to the next generation?
Well, that's a great question, and it demonstrates why it's so important to have education for the profession, the campus professionals or campus administrators or schools, if it's high school, and the volunteers and advisors. And really, that's where hazing, you know, perpetuates itself. It tends to be through traditions. And I think it's important for those advisors and professionals to recognize why students are hazing. There's usually a reason, and often a positive reason, but they're going about their efforts in a backwards way. For instance, students will often cite team building as the vader. There are positive ways to do team building without risking mental or physical harm to students.
Sarah, with that idea of a culture of hazing, again, you're working with fraternities and sororities on your campus there, and I don't want to paint a broad brush here. I know a lot of fraternities and sororities have no interest in hazing at all. When you're talking to the students in these organizations, what do they say about these issues?
Yeah, that is a great question. Our students know that hazing is a problem. They know through not just our work in the Office of Sorority and Fraternity Life, but also in their national organization. They do plenty of risk management on their national organizations require to do hazing prevention. And for our accreditation, for our chapters, a lot of them have sent in PowerPoint presentations of what their risk management policy includes, their hazing statements and education around hazing prevention. So they are having those conversations within their chapters. And then it's, I think, more with this hazing, the Stop Campus Hazing Act, it is more of getting more education out there for at a campus level for all student organizations.
Todd, I don't want to focus just on fraternities and sororities, of course. For marching bands, for sports teams, what kind of advice do you have for that band director or that coach who might be coming into this situation, finding that there has been hazing in the past? What are some of the steps they can do to disrupt that?
I think it's important at the coaches or administrator level to make clear what your hazing prevention policies are and to build a culture of transparency and trust with the students or student athletes. They need to know that if they report hazing, that something's going to happen, that it's going to be investigated, and that those who are involved are going to be held accountable. That accountability is key to stopping future hazing activities.
And I imagine, Todd, a lot of hazing happens in the moment, right? I'm new to this organization, fraternity, sports team, marching band, whatever. And now I'm in this situation where the hazing is being done and I have to make this decision. Do I push back or do I fit in? Do I join the team? How do we build a culture that says that kid can say no, that they can opt out and not fear retribution.
It's important that advisors and professionals do their part in educating new members or new people to the team to understand the process for reporting, and that in the immediacy of the moment, it's okay to step back and not participate in the activities. Once a student reports, they need to know that it's going to be investigated and that anyone found to be involved is going to be held accountable. That's key to stopping future hazing.
Sarah, for fraternities and sororities on your campus, if members of an organization want to be proactive, set better policy, are you there? Is your office there as a resource to help them do that?
Absolutely. Our office is there, as well as our Office of Student Development, which houses our student conduct office. We like to partner with, like my office likes to partner on our risk management series with other offices, so they understand our campus resources and where they can go to ask help, and creating partnerships with conduct, for instance. That is one thing I know me and my colleagues in conduct are working on, is how to make it so it's less scary in a way, so that they know this person, they know that they can report to either myself or our conduct office. We have a form online for students to report as well. And then what that process looks like.
And then Todd, as we wrap up, we've got this new federal law in place. Are there other policy changes that you would like to see when it comes to the issue of hazing?
Certainly. Our coalition has also been very involved at the state level in strengthening the criminal laws at the state level. And I will say that Wisconsin is in a better place than many states in the fact that Wisconsin does have recognition that hazing that involves bodily injury or death is a felony. And a lot of states don't. So I'm happy to see that. But we're continuing our efforts state by state to make sure that the state criminal laws are taking hazing seriously and providing a means for holding students accountable that are involved in hazing.
And we'll leave it there. Todd, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you bringing this topic to your listeners.
And Sarah, thanks for sharing the perspective from Marquette with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Sarah Johannes is a coordinator for sorority and fraternity life at Marquette University, and Todd Shelton is executive director of the Hazing Prevention Network. We've been talking about a new federal law dealing with hazing on college campuses. Were you ever part of an organization that had to deal with the issue of hazing? How did your organization try to tackle that issue, rein it in? Are there further changes in state or federal law you'd like to see when it comes to hazing? Tell us all about it. You can email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That email again, wisconsintoday@wpr.org.